10 things to remember in difficult times. If you're anything like me, you might be inclined to think we're living in difficult times. It is hard day after day after day to comprehend what is happening to our country. The circumstances we're in, the genuine opposition there is to the things of God. And we're dealing with people, no matter how they would phrase it, there is a resentment in their heart of the Creator God. There's a resentment in their heart of the idea that God determines the moral code. And a belief to do something about it in order to force everybody to agree with them. It's just hard to believe we're dealing with things we're dealing with in the United States. And this particular passage is about some things that we're supposed to do when we're in difficult times. Honest with you, I've preached on this several times over the years. The very first time I preached on it, I was still a Bible college student, which was great, except that I entitled it 11 Things to Remember in Difficult Times. And some of the folks were making notes and told me afterwards that I only had 10 points after I'd entitled it 11 Things. So my answer to that, Brother Julian, was that I was a Bible major, not a math major, and tried to cover myself with that. But there are things in there that could be a blessing to us, and so we just want to look at a number of them together. I know many of you will have the notes in front of you as they made available as we came in. Here's the first one, and it's good for us in the circumstances we deal with right now. Fret not because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity. The Lord tells us not to let these things worry us. It's not that they're not sometimes difficult or even dangerous, but God gives a peace in people's hearts to get them through moments like this. So happens that this chapter is what's referred to as an alphabetical psalm. Each verse starts with a different letter of the alphabet in the Hebrew. That didn't translate to English, but it starts with a different letter of the alphabet. And the Jewish people assumed that with such an obvious aid to memorization built into the passage, that God intended for them to memorize this. For us, it would be saying A, B, C, D, different for them. It's the Hebrew alphabet. But it starts with that. It's an aid to memory. We're not supposed to fret. And by the way, that's repeated in verse 7 and verse 8. It doesn't mean we're not surrounded by difficult moments. It means we're not supposed to let that get to us. God has chosen us to live in moments like this. God's chosen us to serve Him in moments like this. God has a purpose for us being here in light of all the times and difficulties and challenges that we face. And just as an illustration of it, area that I've paid great attention to over the years, you're starting to see the Department of Education put all kinds of pressure on Bible colleges to change. And right now they're putting the pressure on accredited Bible colleges. That doesn't mean that's the last chapter of the story. Already the president has issued an executive order forbidding accredited schools, Bible colleges, to have single-sex bathrooms. That all the bathrooms have to be unisex. Now, there's some Bible colleges suing the government over that to try and keep that from being enforced. But it's not that that's coming. It's already happened. There are other, at the request of the Department of Education, there are other folks that are suing Bible colleges to try and change the admission standards so that there could be no limitations morally in terms of who's admitted to Bible college. I mean, the evildoers are there, and they're not after colleges like ours right away. That certainly doesn't mean they never will be. Fret not thyself because of evildoers. Or the second point fits right with it. Neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity. Sometimes you look out there, and it seems like they have so many things going for them. They get so much help. Often they're subsidized, no matter what angle of wickedness they're coming from. They're subsidized by government. They're promoted. They're lifted up as if they were just the elite and the most wonderful, superior people. is not, don't fret about them. Don't be envious of them. And it gives you a good reason in verse 2. For they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Evildoers, their schemes, their ideas, their programs are temporary. And doesn't mean they don't seem to succeed for a while, create problems for a while, but they're temporary. Throughout world history, there have been folks who've thought they had arrived in coming up with a nation or a kingdom or an empire that would be in opposition to the things of God, and how it was just, they'd finally achieved that, and that's where they were at, and that's what the world would be. Hitler, just for an example, announced that the Nazi government that he had established was so strong that it was guaranteed to last for 1,000 years. And they would refer to it as the 1,000-year Reich. It lasted for 12. He's not the first one to have big dreams, not the last. And I don't mean to minimize the damage that's done by those things when they're there, but never forget this when you think about evil and workers of evil. What they're doing is temporary. It comes, it goes. When I was in high school and college, I can remember people saying communism was destined to conquer the whole world. Nothing could stop it. And I remember right out of Bible college teaching in a Christian school and teaching world history class and being a little disturbed to find out that the students in this high school class were all convinced that there was no hope. Communism, it was inevitable. It was going to conquer the world. And it was conquering right at that period of time, new chunks of the world every year. But that's not how it ended up. It says, they shall soon be cut down like the grass. A third and fourth thing in verse 3. Trust in the Lord. I mean, we have a God that is still in charge of everything. He deals any way that he chooses, works any way that he chooses. He strengthens us if we do have to go through difficulty. Trust in the Lord in difficult times. And do good. We're not supposed to just give up and surrender and sit back and act like there's nothing we can accomplish for the Lord anymore. And that's a far cry from the truth. Churches have had to go through some massive reevaluations over the course of the last year. A lot of the things that many churches are involved in, door-to-door soul winning, bus ministry, things of that nature, could not be carried out and still can't be many places in the country. And I was just talking both the last two Sundays with pastors who said, you know, we had to sit back and reevaluate how we're going to reach people. And say, we're not going to reevaluate whether we're going to reach people or not. I had to reevaluate how we're going to do it. You keep doing good no matter what the circumstances are, no matter what the challenges are. I believe pastor is with Brother Ford down in Whitney Baptist Church tonight. I had the privilege of being with Brother Ford on Easter, and it was amazing Easter. He was received an honorary doctorate from our college and spoke at graduation last year. He's been here more than once, and great man of God. I've known him for years, but he's had a leg amputated. That sort of changes everything. He has a little scooter that he rides in church services. And they got a ramp put up, and he'll just come right in from the parking lot and ride on up on the platform. But we were there for Easter. They had 4 services Easter morning. I mean, for the same folks. He called and asked if I would come preach a Bible conference. Often there'll be 4 or 5 services. Only he wanted it all in one morning. And his enthusiasm and excitement about it. I've never done that on an Easter morning before. Frankly, any morning before. But his excitement had impact on his people. You could see their excitement over something that they'd never done before. And I suspect before all the confusion of the last year, if you'd suggested it to them, they probably wouldn't have thought it was a very good idea. They were excited about it that morning. You keep doing good when you're going through difficult times. You have to readjust. You have to look for something different, but you keep doing good. And Jeremy Taylor, you see in verse 3, God promises to meet our needs. When it says, trust in the Lord and do good, so shalt thou dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed. No matter how difficult it is, God has not lost track of us, what we need or what we're trying to accomplish. Jeremy Taylor wrote, it's impossible for a man to despair when he remembers that his helper is omnipotent. And our helper is indeed omnipotent. And he promises to take care of the folks that serve him and that are faithful to him. Then in a fifth point is verse 4. It says, to delight thyself in the Lord. I have heard a lot of folks over the years pastoring. They're frustrated. They're talking about how bad their life is, and work isn't going the way they want it to, and finances isn't the way they want it to be, and health isn't the way it wanted to be. And they get mad at God because they don't have the circumstances they want. And I've even had people tell me about this particular verse that it's not true and it doesn't work because that person wasn't getting the desires of their heart. This is something I've tried to stress over the years. We especially stressed it when I pastored a church that had a Reformers Unanimous program. And we sometimes heard from those folks, say, well, Lord's not giving me the desires of my heart. I'm not getting everything I want. It says, if you delight in the Lord, give God a reason to bless you. Don't just hand him a list and say, this is what I want. Okay? Give God a reason to bless you, and as your desires get right, God has a reason to answer them. And I sometimes saw people from in various settings. They're not faithful to the Lord. They're not faithful to church. They're not trying to serve the Lord. They're not trying to win anybody to Christ. They're not focused on soul winning. They're not focused on missions. They're not focused on doing the things we ought to do. And then they wonder why they don't get more blessing from God. You delight yourself in the Lord. He gives you the desires of your heart. The world always disappoints and frustrates. God grants the desires of the person who delights in him instead of delighting in the world. That's a promise. It's one you can count on. And I've seen it in moments, even when people were in difficulty financially, or they lived with limits in terms of this world's goods, how blessed they were, the Lord. One of my first mission trips, I got to go to Suriname, and we went out in the jungle to a village, and they would distinguish in their terminology. If it had electricity, they called it a town. If it didn't have electricity, they called it a village. And we went to a village to preach, and myself and another preacher, and wonderful family there, and they wanted to be an encouragement to us, and they understood that Americans like soft drinks. So they went to a town to buy 2 cans of Coke. Now, personally, I don't particularly like Coke anyway, but that wasn't the point. There was no electricity in their town, so no refrigeration. And we were near the equator. And they set the 2 cans of Coke out on a picnic table for a significant period of time while we were having the service. And then we went and they put out food for us and gave each of us a can of boiling Coke. Never forget it as long as I live. We drank it. I promise you, if I never have to do that again, it will be okay. They were very, very limited in this world's goods. They didn't even understand the concept of refrigeration. They sure were happy, folks. And by our standards, you could argue they didn't have much. But it's a wonderful, sweet, happy family that loved the Lord and served the Lord. When you're delighted in the Lord, then he can give you the desires of your heart. You move on to sixth thing. Commit thy way unto the Lord. That's a challenge. I said, the Lord can have my future. can do with me whatever he wants, can take me anywhere he wants to take me. I've watched folks wrestle with this over the years. Throughout my whole life, I've been in Bible college situations, full-time staff or as a visiting professor or part-time professor. I've just been on Bible colleges from the beginning. And you see this challenge that young people have about giving their life to the Lord. It's the hard part's not the training or the classes or all that. The hard part is saying, okay, Lord, my future's yours. Do whatever you want to with me. Take me any direction you want to take me. Put me in any situation that you want to put me in. I was in what they call a restricted access nation, Aram, where there are legal problems and the gospel has to function underground, if you will, with a preacher friend. And he was about 40 and had to live constantly under the challenges of being in that setting, never married. And he was telling me, he said, one of the things he had to come to grips with when he said God called him to minister in that set of circumstances where you're in danger all the time. And if you had a wife as your companion and your wife with you, she would be in danger all the time. And he said, I had to come to grips with this early. He said, I could not ask a young lady to share this life with me. And that by being surrendered to do this, it meant I would give up the blessings of being married. And some people would argue whether you could ask a lady to share that kind of challenge with you. But I understood exactly what he was saying. He'd been beaten and imprisoned more than once and threatened with worse than that. And he didn't want to ask a young lady to share that with him. I say, he had to give up something to have the will of God in his life. So you commit your way to the Lord that whatever it is that God chooses for you. And because of Bible college ministry, we're constantly dealing with people. By definition, somebody coming to Bible college, trained for ministry, has had to come to grips with that question at some point in that process. Sometimes they haven't finished coming to grips with it by the time they get to college, and it's still, if you will, a work in progress. But you commit your way to the Lord. And people are asking, the current antagonism towards the things of God, how difficult is this going to get? How scary is this going to get? I don't know the answer to that. I'd like to believe, and this is just pure personal commentary, I'd like to believe the folks antagonistic to the things of God have overplayed their hand and they've gone too far and it's not going to work. That's what I want to believe. I don't have any proof that that's true. God has let people, his people, go through some difficult things in other places and other periods of times. That's just what I want to believe. But you commit your way to the Lord. And then it says to trust also in him. It says, and he shall bring it to pass. Again, he has a purpose in our being the people that live here in a time when Christianity is under attack and faces opposition, I think worse than Americans have ever known before. Verse 6, and he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light and thy judgment as the noonday. One of the things folks sometimes get caught up with is, am I going to be recognized for this, what I do? Am I going to be rewarded for what I do? Am I going to get recognition for what I do? You leave all that to the Lord. He takes care of it in his own time. He takes care of it in his own way and in his own purpose. And in verse, as we go on, an eighth point, verse 7, rest in the Lord. I say that there's more than one kind of rest in the Lord in the scripture. One type of rest has to do with salvation. It's a glorious truth that God has provided salvation for us. and we're resting in that for our salvation, and our soul is not troubled about our eternal destiny, we're resting. But I don't think that's the rest that's here. That rest is real, and I'm glad for it. I'll be teaching next semester in college the book of Colossians, and I've just started studying for it. And I came across a little book. It was actually written by an Episcopal preacher. And we could certainly find some things that we might not agree with Episcopal folk. But this particular preacher, whatever else, he got a hold of this. Salvation is a gift. And that assurance and rest and all that, it comes from recognizing salvation is a gift and staying focused on it. So that kind of rest is in the scripture. But I don't think that's the rest that's right here. I think it's tagged with the next thing that comes also in verse 7. Rest and wait patiently for him. Only two parts that are hard to that. Waiting and being patient about it. So there's only two hard parts in that instruction. Wait patiently. But here is the part that makes this work. Wait patiently for him. Rest and wait patiently for him. God is at work when we don't see him at work. God is at work in settings where we don't know what he's doing. God is at work in situations where we couldn't imagine what his purpose was. But he has one. You can count on it. You can know that. And yes, I can't tell you, going back to academic realm and thinking of giving grades, I'm not sure I've gotten A's on waiting over the years. And I'm real sure I haven't gotten A's on waiting patiently over the years. One of the hardest lessons I had to learn in serving the Lord is that his timetable is not mine. And he chooses to operate on his timetable. I know when my timetable is. I want him to do everything I'm asking him to do today. I mean, right now. I want it right now. And yet he has his own timetable. First church I pastored was a church of very troubled background. And it looked like we had 3.5 really good years there, marvelous time. But my last 6 months there was probably the worst 6 months of my life. And there's a history of trouble the church had had. And I'd set goals for what I wanted to accomplish when I was there. And I preached a sermon one Sunday night on those goals and outlined it, all that. Well, after I was gone, the church continued to have difficulty and trouble. The next pastor had trouble, and the pastor after that had trouble. And their churches get that pattern. But the last Sunday I was pastor, there was a young man saved there. I don't know how that happened, to be honest. I mean, I know the grace of God. It was a horrible church service. It just really was. Everybody fighting and fussing and feuding. And we preached, and I gave an invitation. And I remember being utterly shocked when somebody came for salvation. I just couldn't believe that. But he stayed in there. Went to Bible college from there. I saw him some years later preaching in chapel at the Bible college he went to, and he came up afterwards. He said, you probably don't remember me, and I didn't have a faintest idea who he was. He told me he was the one that got saved my last Sunday as pastor, and I just remember being shocked. Long story short, he eventually became the pastor of that church and led that church in solving the problems. He did things I and 9 other pastors should have done and didn't. And he called me one time, and he said, I just came across, say, how old is a cassette tape of your preaching on your goals? I used to pray for those goals every day. I'd go walk. It was a town of 200 houses. I'd go walking every morning in the town and pray for those goals, ask God to do something. And I assure you, I meant for him to do those right then. But he told me, he said, I want you to know those are my goals. I just re-preached that sermon to the church. And he's gone on to accomplish every one of those goals. Now, that wasn't my time frame for how that was supposed to work out. But apparently it was God's. And God does not forget when we serve him. God does not forget our prayers. The Bible even uses the illustration of the idea of our prayers being like tears collected in a bottle. Collected, not thrown away. Wait patiently for him. Because God is at work more and in settings we would never have imagined. And then verse 8. Tenth thing. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. The Bible even talks about righteous anger. There are some things that ought to make folks angry, but there's not anything that folks ought to stay angry about. It is an issue. Just for example, the Bible uses the illustration. Ephesians says when you get angry and you have some difficulty in the home, some of you, I'm sure, married people so perfect, the thought of getting angry has never happened. But over the years, I've met a few people that might have gotten angry in the course of carrying out the details of a marriage. And the Bible says, if you get angry, you don't go to sleep that way. You settle it before you go to sleep that night. There are times the Bible talks about righteous anger. But if you're not careful, even righteous anger can get a grip on you and a control on you and can make your life something it's not supposed to be. So cease from anger. In difficult times, for example, we watch people in positions of leadership, in people of positions of influence, say and do terrible things. Completely wrong. Completely inexcusable. Things that you understand, even in righteousness, can make you angry. But we're supposed to cease from anger and forsake wrath. We're never supposed to let it consume us, control us, become what we're all about. Cease from anger, forsake wrath. And we're commanded to have the right attitude, serving the Lord in challenging and difficult times. I mean, there's a glorious truth in front of us all. We've been saved by the grace of God. If you haven't been, you can be. You ought to sit with some of the folks tonight, be thrilled to have somebody to sit with you and talk with you about what it means to know Christ as your Savior, show you from the Scriptures, answer your questions. The verses here on the walls are a constant reminder to us. God's plan of salvation is not a plan of works, achievement, or accomplishment on our part. His plan of salvation is a gift paid for by Jesus Christ. When he died on the cross and took the burden of all my sin and all your sin upon himself, and he was our substitute, and he paid the price in a fashion that satisfied the demands of a righteous, holy God. I've had people want me to explain all that, and it's beyond us, the complete explanation of it, but faith in it's not beyond us because it's what God said. And our salvation has been paid for. Not only that, in the most challenging time, the salvation of everybody we would meet and everybody we have to deal with has been paid for. And we have a message for the whole world that no matter how difficult the moment we might be in, I have a message for the whole world. Christ died for you. And there's a whole world waiting for us to take that message to them. God bless y'all.